everyone. Thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed your first session. I'm Aliza Phillips. I'm a psychologist in the middle school. Welcome to Yasmin Academy. Always a pleasure to have everyone. I want to just take a few moments to introduce Mrs. Ruchi Harari to you. We were very lucky to get her. Frank Bookwhites, who is the OU piece of this program, raves about her. She's very, very much sought after, so thank you for coming. We know it wasn't easy to get here. Mrs. Harari, in addition to being a school psychologist, she has experiences with kids and in her private practice. She works with families. And she really does a lot of lecturing, so this is really her area of expertise, particularly on this topic of body image. And in addition to that, she really has a real understanding of the Orthodox community, and that's really the area where she lives and is a part of. So thank you so much for coming, and we're looking forward to hearing.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a lot of clinical facts, I'll give you a couple of stories, and I'll try to drive home really what these young girls, young boys, go through as far as self-esteem and body image, because I think that self-esteem really is the bedrock of it. There's a saying, vision without action is a dream. Action without vision is a passing of time. You have to have vision and action if you really want to change the world and change things. So the bottom line to much of it is self-esteem. And that's what I see among the children. Okay, so this basically your perception of body image and of weight. I'm going to give you a bullet. If this was an older group, I would read more, but I'm just going to give you a bullet of the basic thought of what goes on in the head of a girl or boy or woman who is just very involved with her body and her image of her body. So these are some of the thoughts and beliefs, and this is just clinical, and then I'll go into the stories with you, of what goes into the mind of that young woman, young man, in respect to body image. Many of them say, if I'm thinner, I'll feel better about myself. They lose the ability to think logically. And when you ask them what's wrong, it's always denial. Many of these children, and I see it even in the elementary school, in the middle school, if you ask them about anything, they withdraw. And the teachers start to notice that they have trouble concentrating in school. They're very involved with the self. Many of these kids, anorexic, bulimic, and even children that have body image issues, they have a very hard time talking about their feelings, expressing anger. They will binge eat. They will exercise. They will count their food, their bites. They're so fixed on what goes into their mouth, because a lot of these kids don't have a feeling of self-control. The only thing that they can control in their life, it's not their teachers, it's not their home, it's not their marks. The only thing they feel that they can control is what goes into their mouth. And that's why a lot of these beautiful, beautiful young girls that I meet are anorexic. We did once at LIJ, we see these gorgeous girls that are just layered and layered in clothes, and they're anorexic. A lot of the social behaviors that these children with body image feel, they're the type of person who tries to please everyone but withdraws when you ask them something. They present themselves as being very needy, but certain times they're independent. They have a fear of intimacy, many of them, and they won't relate themselves to you. They did a study that they said anorexics rigidly control themselves, but bulimics lack impulse because they'll eat quickly and then they'll purge. I just want to read you a few bullets of what it is, because I don't think that this audience is dealing with children with any kind of body image, but because I was told to do it, I'm just going to read you a couple of bullets. If you want more, I have no problems doing it. What's a warning sign of an eating disorder? A preoccupation with their weight and how they look. And if you go into the middle schools even, these girls are very preoccupied with that. They make excuses for not eating. They're dissatisfied with their weight all the time. The bulimics are always going to the bathroom. A lot of exercise. They're always cold. You will see and I tell teachers to look, because I've seen it in fifth grade, to really watch how their students, their eating behaviors, if they're strange. They weigh themselves, they weigh their food, A lot of them have tooth decay. A lot of these girls, if you're looking for their bags, they have a lot of laxatives. Laxatives is a very good way to purge everything. So this is something that is off the counter, that it's in the house, and a lot of girls do that. Some kids, some girls will eat excessively, and then they disappear, and that's the bulimic, okay? Bulimia nervosa. Some of the physical signs are weight fluctuations, blood, broken blood vessels in their eye. That is that's a key point to look for, tooth decay and dizziness. What do? They binge eat, they diet, they purge. Most of these girls, whether it's bulimic or anorexic, they always avoid social events that involve food because they don't know how, they don't have that type of control in themselves. Their attitude, if you would look at a lot of these girls, and I look in the schools when I go to a lot of these girls' schools, if I see girls that have frequent mood changes, that's a little bit of a red flag for me. Saying that they're depressed, I give out this, I give out a bath, which is an emotional batter, and I'll have these girls fill it out. And sometimes I'll see when I score it, you know, sometimes I'll put them together, and a lot of these girls will score depression. I know they're not depressed, but they're having a very hard time navigating this world because the media out there, the shidduchim out there, everything out there is very focused on how you look. It's a very focused world on being pretty. So if we can inculcate in these girls, and what I do with these girls is I try to inculcate them self-esteem. You have to deal with the world, not be defined by it. You got to deal with it. It's in the media. It's out there. So if they have that self-esteem, and if you know any of these girls that have that self-esteem, they'll be able to deal with all of these things. A lot of their self-worth is related to weight. If I'm thin, I'll feel better. If I'm thin, I will have a better sense of self. The same thing with anorexia, sufficient weight loss. A lot of them weigh 85% less than what's expected of their height and age. They lose their menstruation. They have to watch the food that they're taking in. It's all basically the same. Shifts in mood, restrictive eating, counting of the food. If you see any changes, not in your own, but in anyone else, then that is a little bit of a warning sign to that there's some sort of an eating disorder. Some statistics say that 1% of the population, of the female population, is anorexic. That's 1 out of every 10 people. And 4% are bulimic. So it's not something that is we push under the table. It really does exist. When we did something at LHI Hospital, there were girls that came from the best of homes and the best of everything, and extremely bright girls. But their perception of themselves was so small that that was the one thing that they were able to feel good about themselves. So for any of you, that's basically a warning sign for you. So what is self-esteem? Self-esteem, I think, is feeling good about yourself, that inner self. Many times we try to fill ourselves with needs that are physical, but we also have to look at ourselves, and you'll see by the answers that you give, and I will go over it with you, it's not only our children's perception, it's our own perception. We all want to look pretty, we all want to be pretty, and that whole Barbie doll syndrome is something that is within our society, and we subconsciously and non-verbally sometimes, we teach them to our children and our grandchildren because that's just the way it is. So self-esteem is something that basically is internal and something that we need to be able to teach our children. I read this proverb which really, I think, relates to this. It says, in the facades we put on for others, we demonstrate our potential. We try to demonstrate our potential. But through our children, we reveal our reality. I call children architects. They read us literally like a blueprint. If we have an issue with weight, if we have an issue with the way we look, our children have a way of picking up on it. And I see that with a lot of the young girls that I meet. They want to look as pretty as mommy. And mommy walks in and she is as pretty. And that whole aura of that look is very important for a lot of these girls. I'm going to read you a couple of studies, but I'm just going to read you a one-sentence study on how self-esteem affects who we are. There's nature. If we're born to shed blood, King Solomon, if you're born, you're born with a certain nature. So if you're born to shed blood, you could be a killer or a surgeon. So we have a nature. But then there's a nurture. And I read some studies. I'm going to read you quickly these studies, and I want you to think about yourself, how you grew up, your parents, and the background. It makes decides the type of people that we are and what kind of messages we're giving down to future generations. So this is, I like to put some of the clinical stuff in that I think you should know about, and then I'll show you some stories and tell you other things, but I think the clinical part of it is as important. So think back to your own generation and how you grew up and understand how you parent. And that has an effect on body image and how kids see themselves. So, if a child slash adult had, now these are studies, had overcritical parents, parents that set high standards, parents that were very critical, as an adult, this child may, again, it's not always, it's a study, will have a sense of inferiority. They will be very critical on themselves. So they'll have to be the smartest, the thinnest, the richest, whatever it is. But it's just a study that I read. Parents that are parents now, when they were children, if there was a significant childhood loss, you were separated by your parent by death or divorce, that child slash parent may feel abandoned. That person grows up with a sense of emptiness, and he needs to attach himself onto something that's going to make them feel good. Whether it is another person, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a friend, whether it's food. Food is a comfort zone. Parental abuse. Now, again, I know it doesn't belong in this arena, but it's just information that I think is important to know. Any kind of deprivation, this child grows up feeling inadequate and doesn't have trust. Studies show that people that were abused become worse abusers. Parents that were alcoholics, they grow up in a society that's very chaotic. So if one parent would drink or gamble, that chaotic society makes that child feel unreliable. And what they need to do, the parent, the alcoholic, denies his feeling. That child learns to deny their feeling growing up. They may become preoccupied in themselves, or they may become attached to someone that will give them a sense of self. Parental rejection. There may not be any abuse in the home, but sometimes there are parents who are just too busy, and that child feels unwanted. That child will grow up to self-sabotage themselves. There's something wrong with me. My parents are always home. What's wrong with me that no one gives me the attention? So that's how they grow up as adults. Parental overprotectiveness, and I'm probably guilty of this too, the parent who overprotects the child. That child slash parent grows up to be someone who's afraid to venture out into the world because they live in this very cocoon that's very safe. A lot of these kids that I see even in the high schools are afraid to venture out. Parental indulgence, the spoiled child. This child, and I see this often, they don't have appropriate limits. These parents do not know how to say the word no. When they grow up, they feel they are cheated in life if someone doesn't give them what they need. So when you grow up, however we were brought up, we have the nature and the nurture. We have a sense of what we want to be for our own self-esteem. And a lot of it gets translated into body image, because that's something that is very physical. You explore your past, you understand your present, and you learn for the future. So I took a blurb from a sixth grade girl, and what she wrote was, actually, I felt pretty good about myself until sixth grade. Then everyone else hated their bodies, so I thought I should too. And this was a girl who's bulimic. She didn't realize that her body was bad. She didn't think her body was bad. But when she realized that all the girls are having such issues with their bodies, then she decided to realize there's something wrong with me. I pulled out a story, a very quick story that I'm going to read to you. It's a story about a tadpole. And what it is, I want to express that when you have children, teach them that there is change. And we all develop differently. I'm going to read it very quickly because a lot of stuff for you, information that I really want to get into. And I don't know how old your children are. Terry was a tadpole. She lived in a silver pool. Every day she went to swim with pals in her own school. But one day Terry woke up. She felt a pang, awful horror. Her leg was growing out of her when none has grown before. Terry's thoughts must be bad. She felt she was a freak, which a lot of girls do. She didn't know the facts, so the fear made her weak. And that's why we do these parenting, this body image stuff in a lot of schools. She tried to hide her legs. She sure it had to show, but she felt like staying home. She didn't want her friends to know. The next day in the classroom, the teacher jumped into the pool and said, Today's the day you'll learn. You'll all be hopping soon. The facts are uncertain. For a while, you might feel odd, but you're not quite tadpoles anymore, but neither grown-up frogs. Mrs. Frog told what would happen, though not everyone felt the same. A few brave tadpoles raised their hands, but the others noticed the change. Some had legs growing out of bellies, some had longer toes, some had bigger muscle, and some had longer nose, which girls have a very hard time with. Some even, and the girls love this, some even wondered, right or loud, what is wrong with me? They hadn't noticed anything from head to tail and fin. The teacher had the answers. Terry knew she would feel great. They had a lot in common. It was normal for a tadpole's fate. These girls have to learn that body image and body weight, when they reach adolescence, it's really 17% they start to gain weight. They have to understand that this is the way they grow. Terry told her family how she woke up feeling strange. Her teacher said out loud, "It isn't strange, it's change." Her family told stories. She felt anxious. They wondered what's the deal when their body changes anew. They said at first they'd worry too when their friends grew more or less, taller, shorter, fatter, or thin. Each one was different. Terry was glad to have the facts and glad she had talked. The answer seemed to calm her, but she knew now she could hop. Her body was strong. It was changing. Her friends would change too. It would take some time out there, but she didn't know what to do. She had to wait and wonder how her looks would be. She had to grow and learn. But the most important perception and the key is we need to teach our children, because the body does change and the body fat changes around at age, is really to teach this good, healthy. There is a thing that we do in the high schools, FEGS. It's a Jewish organization where we have books and we teach these young girls to really like their bodies, because they don't. And it took a tremendous grant from an organization to give money to the yeshiva world to teach these gorgeous, gorgeous girls to like themselves. If they're not, if they're apple shaped, they don't all have to be that size too. So perception is the key. I'm going to talk quickly about what I think is the key to self-esteem. Okay, and the first part, I think it's part of the handout that I gave you. I don't know if it's part of the health. The first part is, and I'll go quickly through it. I don't know how much time we have, and I'll try just to tell you what these little girls go through. If you have questions, because I don't know the ages you are, I'll be happy to help you. I usually deal with older, high school and in college, so I'm not sure of the age group here.
The, 940.
940, thanks. The first part of self-esteem is security. Then there's selfhood, affiliation, mission, and competence. Those are the five keys to self-esteem. So I'm going to go quickly. When I say security, when a girl or a boy or any of us need security, that's a bedrock of self-esteem. What do I mean? If I made an analogy, it's the way a baby feels when they're enveloped in their mother's arms or father's arms. That feeling of security, that feeling of safety. So if that child walks in with a 100 or a 50 on a test, that child feels secure that they are loved. I always say, whether it's husband and wife or single parent, I know I had mentioned something and there was a single parent, but husband and wife, mother,
and Shabbat. You give them 15 minutes a day, one day a week. And what do I mean by that? I've had mothers tell me, and fathers, I'm with my child 24/7, and I just don't have enough time for them, and they just don't have self-esteem. So I say to them, 15 minutes a day, once a week. So if you'd say, Moshe, Thursday from 4:45 to 5, Leah, Tuesday from 2 to 2:15. Again, I don't mean 15 minutes. I mean a specific time. It's got to be the same time every week and the same day. So every Tuesday it's Leah, every Friday it's Moshe, whatever it is. For younger kids, and I know this is not a younger group, but even older kids, I put it on the refrigerator, and they know that day, every single week, it's me and them. A, they know that they look forward to that time to talk. That is the bond that starts to be created between parent and child. So every Tuesday, it's Moshe and me. Sometimes I'll tell a father, call your wife. And just say, I can't talk to you now. I'm with Moshe. What do you think Moshe feels like? Don't you think he'll come to you or she'll come to you when you'll have a peer pressure in school? My friends aren't eating. Oh, my friends are taking stuff. You develop that bond with that child. Also, I say to do with husband and wife, but this is, we're doing body image now. It's very important to have that connection. And on a lighter note, as the children grow, I remember doing this, and one of my sons, when I walked to Israel, he's in his 30s now, so at that time we didn't have cell phones, and he called me, and he said, Ma, this is my 15 minutes. And I said, expensive 15 minutes. He said, this is my 15 minutes. And you know what? He's married, he has children. Tables turn. I get my 15 minutes. But one day a week from X amount of time, me and him, me and her. It's me and all of them. Where we bond, where they could come over and say, my friend is starving, my friend is taking stuff, I want a drag ring. Whatever it is, this peer pressure, I can talk to you because you are there at that specific time. That's security. That's security. And that's what they need. Listening for self-esteem. And they'll tell you what goes on because that's what they tell us. I get paid for it. What's the art of listening? What did we learn as a therapist? You hear them. You understand them. You appreciate the child, the spouse, the friend, anyone. Then you could agree or disagree. And then you problem solve together. If you listen, you say to them, I validate you, I hear you. And when you talk to your child, you look at them. Eye contact is key. Tell me what you think and I'll know your mind. Tell me what you hear and I'll know your heart. As a parent, and it says it in the Talmud, and I'll read it. A person should be flexible like a reed and not rigid like a cedar. In a storm, it's the bamboo, the flexible tree that can bend the wind and survive. It's the rigid tree that parents says, I want those certain grades, I want certain things, that resists the wind will ultimately break, fall victim of its own insistence of control. Kids need you, whether it's talking about anything else. Standards of approval. And I'll read you something that the media, I pulled out that, you know, the media puts out. What's standards of approval? Kids, whether it's the way they look or whatever it is, they want to meet our standards of approval. Our standards of approval should be low enough that our children should reach it, but high enough so that they should be motivated. So if it had to do with school, you can't expect one child who always gets 90s, the second child who can't, to get it. Because if it's not reachable, they'll always meet disapproval in your eyes, and then they're going to seek to go outside, and they're going to seek to look a little different. I pulled out something about how the media works. How do you sell a product? People pay millions of dollars to sell a product. They want to get you. So part of the media, and that has to do with standards of approval. Our product is for you. It could be for moms, for dads, for teenagers, for teachers, for dancers. You are a person who is or could be happy, adventurous, healthy, gorgeous, successful, unattractive. You could be all of this.
You believe in family life. You feel like getting ahead. You want to take care of yourself. You want to look good. You want to have that pizzazz. If you want beauty, you want great hair, white teeth, be thin. You want popularity. You want to be attractive. Do what it takes. Do you want power? Control to be in charge. Have money. Have wisdom. Whatever you want. Interest. Do you want to laugh? Do you want to find someone you could meet? Balance. Time. Health. If you want any of these things, if you want to look beautiful, my product is for you. That's the mentality that the advertising world goes. They go after what people want. People want to be beautiful. These models are airbrushed. If you look at what these models look like before they go on the cover of Vogue, they do not look like that. They did a, wasn't there, I think a few months ago, where one of the models was too thin? Was it for Ralph Lauren? I don't remember which one it was. They made her. Now, these girls, and I hear them in school, fifth grade and up, they want to look like that. They want to be beautiful like that. But if they don't have the self-esteem, you have to deal with the world, not be defined by it. If they don't have the self-esteem, they're going to be defined by it. If they do, they'll deal with it. They'll understand that that's not how we're created. I'm going to tell you a little story and a true story. I gave birth over 30 years ago. A friend, another woman, was in the room with me. And, you know, your first child, they say, should be a boy. So I had a boy, and she had a girl. Disappointment. She was so disappointed. First child was a girl. So we always say, Mayim Lepanim, the child's identity is the external world. How you look at your child is their identity. That's what they see. So step number one, no good. She was a girl. Then she grew up, and she had a learning issue. She didn't do well in school, so the teachers called her up and said, not a smart girl. So she was disappointment number two, but her brothers were very smart. So she decided that she was going to, now I know the girl, so it's not a made-up story. So she decided that she was going to clean the house, and the house would be beautiful when her mother comes home from work. No good, because she just couldn't get it right. No matter what she did, her mother said wasn't good. She wasn't as pretty as the other girls, and she wasn't a size. So she would starve herself and do all these things. Then the school saw that she became very thin, and she started putting a little bit of makeup on. So the school said, no, it doesn't work in our yeshiva, and they threw her out. They threw her out. So before that, what would happen is she made herself beautiful. She went to the pizza shop, talked to the boys. Ultimately, the school threw her out. I remember when she would come to me, she would say, I just want to feel worthy. I don't feel it at home, so I lost the weight and put the makeup on. When I go to the pizza store, the boys make me feel like I'm worthless. She didn't go on her diet before. She went on it so someone would feel that she's worthy. Her identity is the external world. The end of the story is she got married to someone. Her parents wanted her to get married. They got divorced. She went off to Israel. She met a wonderful Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin fueled in her self-esteem. And today she's remarried with children and ended up being a very nice story. But the point was, if she was imbued with self-esteem, she might not have had to go to all of that. The second part of self-esteem is selfhood. There's a saying, he that would govern others should be a master of yourself. But what does the media world say? Image is everything. It's not who you are, it's how you look. People agree that beauty is skin deep, but isn't one picture worth a thousand words? That's what these girls see. Open up the magazines, open up everything. Beauty is what you see. It's not who you are, it's how you look. So if you teach your children to have that inner strength, they will say that. Eleanor Roosevelt once said, no one could make you feel inferior without your consent. So if you believe in yourself, the media, the peers won't make you feel inferior, so you won't have to go into the binge eating. And I'm not just saying this. There are a lot of girls. It's very prevalent out there. I deal with a lot of them. wonderful, wonderful homes. Reinforce self-descriptions. I had a girl, I knew a girl whose brothers were very smart and she wasn't. So her mother gave her art lessons. So while the brothers brought home the hundreds, the mother displayed all her artwork. Okay, that was her sense of self. You have to be able to provide opportunities to show your strength. In the Talmud it says, a man is what he is, not what he used to be. Not what he used to be. And that's something. I once said to a teacher workshop, when I do these teacher workshops, teachers have a tendency to want to have cookie cutter students. Everyone has to do this. So I once tried to make an analogy to them. If you would see them like a flower garden, you have flowers that are tall and thin and red. You have short flowers that are yellow, all kinds of flowers. But the one thing that they have in common is they're beautiful. Every flower, the short stubby ones and the tall thin ones. And I think that's the message we have to bring our children, is that a wise person learns from every source. The highest form of wisdom is kindness. I'm going to read you something, and I want you to think about this. I'm going to read you a story of two girls. I want you to jot down in your mind or on the paper what you think these girls look like. Okay? I'm going to tell you about two girls. One is Helen and one is Becky. And I want you to tell me what these girls in your mind look like, to show you it's how the environment affects, the media affects how we look. Helen. Helen lives in an upper class home. She's 16 years old. Her parents are well known in the community and she's very popular. She walks as if she's light as a feather. When people tell her that she looks beautiful, she feels it inside. She stands tall and holds her head up because she feels proud and happy and beautiful. Her favorite activities are dancing, swimming, and talking with friends. She looks forward to being an artist and having her own family. So in your mind, I want you to envision what Helen looks like. Okay? Becky. Becky's a sophomore in high school. Her mother is a doctor and her father is a lawyer, and they both work very hard. Becky has many friends who often discuss their problems with her. She is sensitive to them and takes a great deal of time with their concerns. During her conversations with her friends, they often tell her that she's thin and that she looks great. She doesn't believe them. They say she looks great. She hurries from class to class, hopping in quick movement. Maybe that will help her burn up more calories. Becky often worries about what she eats, and she weighs herself twice a day. She's involved in many sports and after school activities as possible because she likes to stay busy all the time. How many people think that Helen is a blonde, a brunette, or a redhead? What would you think Helen looks like? That's the first one. Or Becky, what do you think that her eye color is? What do you think her skin color is? And what do you think she weighs? So I want you to envision Becky in your head. I want you to envision Helen in your head. Helen, the first one with the self-esteem, is 5'2". She weighs 150 pounds. She has dark hair, dark eyes, and dark complexion. She lives in Athens, Greece, where that's beautiful. Becky, who weighs herself and runs and doesn't feel pretty. When someone says she's pretty, she doesn't believe them. Becky's 5'6". She weighs 108 pounds. She's a redhead with green eyes and fair complexion, and she lives in Boston. Now, Helen is 5'2", is 150 pounds. I think she's the most beautiful girl in the world. She walks light as a feather. Becky runs from place to place, weighs her food, and someone says, you're beautiful, she doesn't believe them. She's 5'2", and weighs 106 pounds. Red hair and green eyes. So part of what we try to teach these girls is not what you weigh, not your body image. How do you see yourself? Major part of the body image. Affiliation, part of self-esteem. I'm going to go quickly because we have 10 minutes. Chesed. studies show the brain, that part of the brain that lights up, that shows, that makes you feel calm, it lights up, you get more pleasure giving than receiving. It shows up neurologically. If you teach your child chesed, it's a very important part of the self-esteem. To have affiliation, you have to feel included. If you feel included with someone, you have self-esteem. I had a patient in my office, a 32-year-old man who couldn't seem to make it in business. And when you go back, you found out that the parents were fighting, they never included him in anything, and he really felt inadequate. He couldn't venture out and start a business because he just remembered that he just had no control of anything. If in your home there's inclusion, you're telling your child you're significant. If there's some control, and I'm not saying controlling the house, for little kids, control the cereal box, that person feels adequate and capable and can deal with the world and can deal with the media. If there's openness and discussion, then that child feels light. I'm going to go quickly. There's a little story called The Ugly Duckling. You ever hear The Ugly Duckling that these children read when they're very young? I don't have much time, so I'm not going to go through it much. The Ugly Duckling starts out where there's a big turkey egg. Everyone thought it was a turkey egg and other eggs. The egg's cracked, and out comes this big duck, or he thought it was a duck. He looked around, and he said, "All the other ducks are beautiful. He is big and ugly." The other children said that he was an ugly duckling. And this is just inserts of this nursery story that we read our children. He's big and ugly. This ugly duckling said he wished he was never born. He ran away because he was ugly. Withdrawal, bulimia, anorexia. He ran away because he was ugly. He meets a sportsman. He meets a woman. And this woman says, if you can't purr like a kitten, then you're worthless. Low self-esteem. Nobody understands me. He runs away. As time passed, he goes back to the beautiful ducklings and he says, I quote from this story, "I will fly to these royal birds and they will kill me because I am so ugly." Body image. Better to be killed than to made to feel so bad by society. As time grew, he realized that this ugly duckling became a beautiful swan. And this is what it said. He felt happy. "I never dreamed of such happiness as this while I was an ugly duckling." That seems to remind me of a lot of these girls that start dieting because they feel that if they're thin and beautiful, then they will discover happiness. 4 is a mission. You have to teach your girls, your boys, whoever it is the mission, is part of it is how we look. But we have to learn to pay attention to who we are. You teach your girls nutrition. You teach your girls perception, the story of the two girls. You teach your kids eating healthy. You also talk about the tadpole story, how this tadpole evolved into a frog and all of them look different. But with facts, they were able to grow. It's learning how to deal with the world, not to be defined by it. You teach your kids to set goals to be able to do it. What are some needs that you have or that anyone has that would make you feel better about your own self? What is it that you need? And that's what you would talk about with your child. Do they need to feel that they need friends? Do they need to be listened to? Do they need to be validated? A lot of these girls don't feel validated, so they do all these things. Like that girl in the pizza store, because she was validated by those boys, it ended up throwing her out. Does she need to feel a sense of accomplishment, creativity, and spiritual life? When that child has confidence, when they feel good about themselves, they will be able to enjoy their strengths and their weaknesses. When I give an IQ test, and I do that all day, every day, all these years, a lot of that self-esteem comes across in their IQ test. When a parent comes in, after I give an IQ test, I always tell the parents their strengths. I do. They can do this, they can do this, they can do this. But embrace their weakness. Because guess what? We all have strength, we all have weakness. I'm not sure.
finish up. If they understand that, they have a longer nose, they have a wider body, they'll be able to embrace it. That's their strength and their weakness. And I think a lot of us forget that.
And we did a thing on Shidduchim a while ago, and that was part of it. Body image was a major part of it. So teaching your child confidence, self-praise is important. Praising yourself, praising your body will be able to make you feel that you could deal with everything in the world. I read this article again. I want you to envision it, close your eyes, on how the environment affects our body, affects how we react to our body in many ways. So I want you, I'm trying to find different ways because I don't know you and I don't know how old your children are. But if you envision these analogies, then you can envision what it is that would help you. This is the lifestyle of a wild cat, okay? And I make believe you're a wild cat, okay? I want you to envision that in yourself. You're in two different environments, and it'll show you how you feel about yourself and how you become. You're a wild cat. You could be a tiger. You could... with huge, stripped bodies stalking through tall grass, muscles ready to pounce for your supper, or you could be a cheetah, the fastest animal in the whole world, or a mountain lion, balancing on ledges, leaping across wide rocky crevices without fear. You decide. Decide who you want to be. Which will it be? Do you want to be a powerful tiger, lightning speed cheetah, or a leaping mountain lion? Decide. After you decide, take a few moments to get into your skin. Imagine what it would be, what it would feel like. Feel your muscles running. Feel you leaping. Just imagine being in the woods. You are strong, and you have to survive with your own strength and speed. You must be ready to protect your family with the power of your body and your strength. You have to have confidence in your physical ability. You have to trust your body, and it makes you feel sure of yourself. Your life is balanced. You rest, you play with your cat family, then there's the need to hunt for food and water. Your life is balanced by the rhythm of rest, play, hunt, and feed. Now you need to move regularly to survive. You have to be in that jungle. Because you have to survive. You have to find food. You have to find everything. How does your body feel? How do you feel? You have to be fit. You have to have nutrition. You have to be fit to live in the jungle. Not you're not going to survive. Now you're that same wildcat. You're going to change the scene. And that's a little bit our environment. And I think a lot of our students, a lot of our children, are very comfortable. That's why they don't do well on school. And that's why they have these things. Because they're very complacent. But I'm changing the scene. You're that same wildcat. But now you're still born with a strong and muscular body. But the scene now is in a zoo, in a very comfortable home. You and your cat family spend your days together, but you never know the wild. You've never know what it is to run long distances through tall grass. Your life exists entirely within space, the size of a classroom, the size of your home. That's the zoo. You're no longer out in the wild. You play with your family. There are rocks to climb. You wrestle and you run. Only a few leaps bring you to a fence that stops you. When you're hungry, instinct makes you look for food. But you never have to look far because food is brought right to you. At the same time, every day, meat is ready to eat. You have no real use for your strength anymore. Now, very little physical effort is needed. You feel thirsty? There's water a few steps away. You circle your cage. You feel a little restless. You don't know why. Everything is easy. Everything is easy. But something drives you to pace back and forth along that fenced wall. Mostly you eat and sleep and watch. Now, feel your body. Pay attention to how you feel in the zoo. In particular, how does your body feel? How do your muscles feel? As you grow older, you spend more and more time resting and sleeping. There's not much reason to move. All your needs are taken care of. Your job is to be on display for people passing by. When you're hungry, you eat just as always. but your body doesn't use all the food anymore, and you get fatter. Without the use of your muscles, you're not as strong. The less you do, the less you feel like doing. You watch the world go by. How does your body feel now?
Different. So you're saying cheating, lying, whatever it is, but you don't appreciate your body, you don't exercise your body, you don't take care of your body, you change. What happens in society today, and what I see, we live in a culture where we don't have to go out and do things. So we resort to other things to look good. If you teach your child not to go out and walk, but the idea is to exercise, to eat well, to work hard, to appreciate their bodies, to go out and venture out into the world, they won't have to resort in looking at their bodies a certain way. They'll appreciate it. They'll be strong. And I think that's part of it. We live in a very privileged society. We want to look a certain way. We want to do a certain thing. But we don't put strength into it. And that's part of the environment. You have the same wild animal. In the woods, he had to survive. He was strong and fit. In the zoo, everything was given to him, and he became lazier and unhappy. And that's why I even see in a lot of the high schools, a lot of children taking, you know, they're depressed. A lot of stuff out there. So if you teach your child competence, feeling good about their body, feeling strength in their body, nutrition,
hello, the and time now is approximately 9:40.
That self-esteem,
our second session will
be
soon
able
be coming to an end,
feel better
to be followed
about
by a 10-minute break, and then our keynote presentation in the gymnasium.
I just want to go over the answers to the test that I gave. How much you eat and how much you exercise are the major factors that determine how much you weigh. What did everyone think? How much you eat and exercise determine how much you weigh. It's false, actually. Yes, part of it is true, but 80% of the weight of a person is genetic. Okay, so part of the girls that say, I don't understand this, I do all these things yet, I'm big boned, it's statistics I'm reading it show that 80% of body is genetics, and also fat cells. If you're born with a certain amount of fat cells, that stays with you. The only way fat cells are removed is surgically. Two, women pay more attention than men to their weight because obesity is a greater health risk for women. It's false. It's false. Why? The health risk is within the stomach area, and for women, most of their weight usually is around the thigh area, and that is what they say. It's a storing place for when they get older, when they nurse. I'll just go quickly with you. Obesity causes heart disease and cancer. It's false. How much you weigh has nothing to do with, yes, if you weigh around the stomach area, but they say that women or men that are moderately obese, actually they live longer than the other. So the only place that it has to do with weight would be around the stomach area, and it's not usually women. Four, studies show that people who are fat because of heredity factors eat the same amount or less than non-obese people. It's true. Genetics plays a major role. I know we have to lead. Five, overweight or obese people tend to be more emotionally disturbed than non-obese people. It's false. Psychological factors, they may start eating, but psychological factors are not contributed to obesity. Six, a healthy diet should contain 30% fat. True. Gaining weight and fat is a natural part of adolescent development. True. In fact, they say fat to body weight ratio necessary for female adolescents is development is 17%. Okay? So they need to do that. Eight. Once you've developed a fat cell, it cannot be eliminated except with surgery, and that's true. Only through surgery. So you could diet all you want. You have a specific, you know, genetic code for that. Other than keeping warm, fat cells serve no useful purpose for the human body. False. For women, it's important for many things. There's stored energy, protects you against falls, hormonal changes in puberty. 10. Some people become overweight in response to stress They eat too many fattening foods. That's true. I have one thing that a parent wrote, and I'll just read it to you, and then you could go. You're a marvel. Each second we live in a new and unique moment of the universe, a moment we'll never begin again. And what does that teach our children? We teach them that two and two make four. Paris is the capital of France. We teach them what they are. But if you teach them that they are a marvel and that they are unique and there's not another child like you, your child, large, small, whatever, could be Shakespeare, anyone that they want to be. And I think that if you learn to teach that to your children, they will know this. I read one other thing, and I think it's important, even in marriage. It says, if you respect me, I will hear you. If you listen to me, I'll feel understood. If you understand me, I feel appreciated. If you appreciate me, I know you'll support me. If you support me, I'll try new things. I'll be responsible in all my endeavors. If I'm a responsible adult, deal with the world, not be defined with it, I'll be independent and connected to you. If I'm independent, I will be respected and love you. All they need is to have that self-esteem, deal with the world, not be defined by it. And then you could choose the environment where it's the cheetah, the girl in Athens versus New York. Whatever it is, you could explain your bondage. Okay, thank you.